Coming today on Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast.
You know, if you look at your life right now, people would think, oh, she lives this fairy tale life. Mm-hmm. You know, she's married to this television producer. She's got this beautiful, you're beautiful. You've got this amazing blog. You've got this cookbook, this whole thing. But your life was not always this amazing. I mean, you've had real struggles, and you know what it's like to have difficult times.
Welcome to Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast with Rebecca Zung and Susan Guthrie.
This is the place to hear other people's stories, to learn from the top experts in every related field, to also have some fun, laugh, and hang with two divorce attorney girlfriends who are also top family law litigators.
Breaking Free Mediation is proud to be the very first family law mediation centers in the country to offer a mindfulness track. Breaking Free Mediation, helping you resolve family law matters peacefully. Learn more at www.breakingfreemediation.com.
Also, make sure to download your free calming meditation from renowned meditation and energy expert Scott Picard at www.breakingfreefromdivorce.com/free meditation.
And now we invite you to listen to today's show.
It's going to inspire you to transform and break free. Welcome to today's podcast. Our topic today is Eat, Pray, Slay, how Ariel Lori used wellness and transcendental meditation to power through addiction and create the life of her dreams. I'm Rebecca Zung.
And I'm Susan Guthrie. Today we have another inspirational guest for you, wellness blogger and celebrity fitness guru, Ariel Lori. Ariel is the woman behind The Blonde Files, a lifestyle brand that includes a popular blog and an Instagram account on which she posts content related to food, fitness, fashion, beauty, and traveling. In 2018, she published her first book, which is an amazing cookbook. We know, we have it, and we love it. But she also has in the works a podcast, a YouTube channel, and another book, which is also coming out in 2019. She is a real overachiever. She's got a lot going on. But this all started, as a hobby for her, but it turned into a career when she realized that women all over the world identified with her personal struggles and sought her advice in overcoming their own. Ariel's journey in wellness began 5 years ago when she got sober after nearly dying from alcoholism and drug addiction. In sobriety, she discovered a passion for helping others, which drove her to return to school to pursue substance abuse counseling training. She worked as a behavioral health consultant for several years while also running her Instagram account, where she documented her own pursuit of optimal health. Her account gained popularity quickly, and in the last year, as she has focused on wellness beyond the parameters of diet and exercise, it has truly blossomed to where it is now, with over 225,000 loyal followers and counting. It's probably higher than that as you listen today. In the highly saturated lifestyle and wellness market of today, Ariel stands out because of her keen ability to connect with others, to draw from her many struggles and experience, and to provide hope and encouragement to those on their own journeys. She's a proponent of doing what feels best individually rather than promoting a one-size-fits-all approach to health, and to explore many different avenues, be it emotional, physical, or spiritual, to live a dynamic life. In 2018, she also married television producer and recent Golden Globe winner Chuck Lorre. She's truly living proof that no matter how low your life may seem, step by step, you can rebuild and you can create your best life. Welcome, Ariel.
Thank you. And thank you for that intro.
You're welcome. You have a lot of wonderful things to say.
And welcome from me too, Arielle. I'm so happy that we finally got you on. What our listeners don't know is that we tried so hard and you know, you've been through a lot lately with the Malibu fires and so I'm so glad that we were finally able to connect and get you here. So let's start, you know, like, you know, if you look at your life right now, people would think, oh, she lives this fairy tale life. You know, she's married to this television producer. She's got this beautiful, you're beautiful. You've got this amazing blog. You've got this cookbook, this whole thing. But your life was not always this amazing. I mean, you've had real struggles and you know what it's like to have difficult times. If you would share with our listeners, you know, what some of the worst times were of your life and how you got where you are now.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, just listening to that intro even, and kind of hearing what my life is now, it's hard for me to reconcile where I was 5 years ago. Because 5 years ago, I was at the lowest point of my life. I was a really late stage alcoholic. I was a drug addict. When I got sober, so February, 5 years ago, by that point, I had been living with my long-term boyfriend, and he had packed up and moved out and taken all the furniture. So I was living in an empty apartment, having seizures nonstop, having not eaten because I couldn't leave my apartment.
What was causing your seizures?
Alcohol and Xanax. I was physically dependent on alcohol and drugs. And I got to the point where I couldn't leave my apartment. So I wasn't eating and I wasn't getting any more alcohol. And so my body was going into withdrawal and I was having seizures. And my family lived 3,000 miles away and they couldn't get in touch with me. So they had the police come and do a wellness check. And when they did that, they couldn't get into my apartment, but they saw through a window that I was face down, unresponsive on my floor. And they don't know how long I had been there for. And they broke in and took me to the ER. And, you know, I really don't remember any of this except for bits and pieces, but I, you know, very dramatically ripped the IVs out of my arm and got out of the hospital and went back and kept doing what I was doing. And you know, what had preceded that was a few months of pretty much a blackout. I mean, I was very close to dying. And I was very alone. I had nobody in my life anymore. I couldn't even pick up the phone to talk to anybody, you know, on the occasion that I would order food or something. I did it all through my computer because I could have no human interaction. So my family, in a last ditch attempt to save my life, they hired some help and they flew out to California and they showed up at my door on a Saturday morning. And as soon as I opened the door, I dropped and had another grand mal seizure. And I went to the hospital and I was there for many days until I was taken to detox. And the doctors there said that had they not found me when they did, I would have died. And that was where 10 years of what I called partying, but was really, you know, severe addiction and alcoholism. That's where that had led me. And it's interesting, you know, I know that you have a divorce podcast, and I'm not comparing this to divorce at all, but kind of what precipitated my drinking and using as a coping mechanism was a relationship. The first relationship that I ever had in my life when I was a teenager was very abusive and emotionally manipulative, and it destroyed me. And it didn't make me an alcoholic or an addict, but I didn't have the skills to cope with it. So I turned to that probably much sooner in life than I would have otherwise. And, you know, I still to this day, I think because those were my formative years, you know, 14 to 21 when we were together, 20 or 21. it was just heartbreaking. So that was the first real pain, and I couldn't deal with it. So I numbed out, and that became my pattern for 10 years. And I would go to treatment and get out and kind of get my life together. But I couldn't stay sober, and things just kept getting progressively worse. I couldn't hold a job. I would go to school, but then I would drop out of my classes, and I was in relationships, and I was always a relationship person. So I always had a boyfriend, but my behavior was so erratic, and I was just not somebody that anybody wanted to be in a relationship with. So those always ended, and I was in just constant pain.
Would you have called yourself a very sensitive person to begin with, like even before all of this started?
Yeah, I think I was sensitive.
I know Elizabeth Vargas. Do you know who she is?
It sounds familiar.
She's the newscaster.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, she used to be the head anchor for CBS News for a period of time, and she talks about her alcoholism, and she actually says that she always was prone to anxiety anyway, and you know, very sensitive, and that the alcoholism actually then changed her brain, where she became physiologically dependent upon the alcohol, but it really started off with being sensitive and being prone to anxiety to begin with.
Yeah, I'm definitely a fear-driven person. and, you know, even big fears and small fears. So the fears that led me to drink could be, you know, just anxiety about being in social situations even. And then, of course, much, much bigger fears. But that's kind of, I think, what drove my drinking. Definitely sensitivity as well. But, you know, alcoholism and addiction, it's a vicious cycle, because once you're in it, it becomes a shame spiral too. So I would have so much shame and remorse about things that I did when I was drinking or using, and just about where my life had gone or had not gone. You know, I grew up in a really good family. I went to private school. I had every opportunity. And, you know, I just didn't do anything for 10 years besides party. That's what I called it. But, you know, it just became my number one priority. And it was because I couldn't face reality. And I couldn't deal with emotions like pain or disappointment or anxiety or fear, just regular emotions. So I needed that lubrication at all times. And, you know, yeah, then once I got physically dependent on it, that was a really terrible position to be in, because I, even if I wanted to stop, I knew that I couldn't. So by the end, you know, what I was talking about in the very beginning, when I was having seizures and I had just kind of resigned myself to the belief that, you know, I was too ashamed to ask for help. I was totally alone. I didn't necessarily want to die. I wasn't trying to die, but I didn't care if I did. I had nothing left.
Was there something, you know, because I've had clients, you mentioned earlier, you know, it's a divorce podcast and you wouldn't say it's the same, but I have had clients say that to me. And what you say strikes a chord, that for them, alcohol, their addiction started because they were in a situation, in these cases, it was a bad marriage or an abusive marriage or a marriage that wasn't working. And so they turned to the alcohol as an escape or a numbness, that it would just take away whatever that pain was for that moment in time. And although it continued to make it worse, because they'd keep drinking, that would just cause more conflict, as you said, the spiral in the relationship that would then drive them to drink more. But so I think there's a lot in what you're saying that would people going through the strain or stress of divorce, either being the alcoholic or the person with the addiction issue, or being married to the person with the addiction issue, it sounds like it makes so much sense there.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a vicious cycle. And, you know, there was some serious pain as a result of my drinking and using. So there was pain that was the reason why, you know, why I turned to it initially. And then there was the pain that came from, you know, the situations that I put myself in and the situations that were happening around me. You know, a real turning point for me was, I guess now it's 7 years ago, my best friend at the time was murdered and I found her. And that was a big T trauma, you know, where if you don't deal with that, that's going to do some real damage. And I didn't have the mental capacity to deal with it. I had been, you know, drinking and drugging for so many years. And so,
wow, that is really, really traumatic. That's awful.
Yeah, I can't
imagine. And the crazy part, though, is that at the time, it didn't feel like, you know, I look back on it now and I'm like, God, I have so much compassion for myself at that time. But at the time, it just felt like that was normal almost. Like, this is just what happens in life, you know? It didn't seem at all astonishing that would be something that I witnessed, or, you know, it was just the way that we normalize things is just really astonishing.
I love that you say that you had compassion for yourself now, like that you have compassion for that person at that time. That is beautiful. Like, how, I want to know how you got from there to where you are now.
Breaking Free Mediation is proud to be the very first family law mediation centers in the country to offer a mindfulness track. Breaking Free Mediation, helping you resolve your family law matter peacefully. Learn more at www.breakingfreemediation.com. Also make sure to download your free meditation at www.breakingfreefromdivorce.com/free meditation. Coming up, more from Rebecca and Susan on Eat, Pray, Slay, how Ariel Lori used wellness and transcendental meditation to power through addiction and create the life of her dreams.
Something about challenging myself physically and overcoming that challenge every day, it just transformed my confidence. It was just like another piece of the puzzle, you know, the emotional aspect is part of it. The spiritual aspect is part of it. The physical, you know, it all kind of fits together.
Take a listen to our archive where you can hear Rebecca and Susan discuss more topics on divorce in depth, including warning, fix these things in your marriage, or say goodbye.
Yeah, if you find financial paperwork around the house that you don't know what that is a definite problem.
Yeah, like
keep a copy of that paperwork, but that's a big, big problem.
You know that alarm on your phone that goes bong, bong, bong? That's what should happen.
Or that warning thing in the car when you don't put your seatbelt on and it gets louder and faster.
Yeah.
That's what you should hear in your head if you find a secret bank account.
And now, return to today's show.
So that, you know, like I said, that was a turning point, and it really accelerated my alcoholism and addiction because I couldn't deal with it. And so everything came to a head that day that I told you about when my family showed up, and I knew that I was out of options. I knew I couldn't keep living the way that I was living. And I just decided to let somebody else take the reins. So, you know, I went to detox and I went to treatment. And I really, you know, even though I had been before and I had been through that process before, it was different because I finally believed that, you know, I had to be sober. Like I know that if I were to drink again, it would ultimately lead me to die probably. So, you know, it's interesting because I had gotten in such bad form physically, giving up the drugs and alcohol was the easy part. You know, that was almost like, I never struggled with that again, thank God. but it was all of that emotional pain and, you know, that trauma and just years of numbing out that I had to deal with. And so I was actually in a treatment environment for a year. I did inpatient rehab for 90 days, and then I did an extended care program, and then I did sober living. And it was only 4 years ago, which is really something to think about.
It's pretty amazing as we sit here and see you today looking so healthy and vibrant and beautiful and successful with all that you're doing, to imagine that that was only 4 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, being in an environment, a treatment environment, it allowed me to really dive deep and do the work that I needed to do, that I had needed to do my whole life probably, while kind of having a supportive safety net there. And, you know, I poured myself into really kind of a spiritual way of living and into helping other people. And that's ultimately, it sounds kind of like Pollyanna, but it was the only thing that got me out of myself and helped me build self-esteem and, you know, value that I had never had before. That and a ton of therapy.
Yeah. Well, that's incredible.
Yeah. I can't say enough about good therapy. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Every week. Well, like, I mean, I still go to therapy and every week I have these like revelations. It's so helpful. I'm a proponent of therapy for sure.
Absolutely.
Well, and if you think about what you just said, you know, after 10 years of numbing your emotions, you take away the numbing agent, you take away the alcohol, you take away the drugs, and all that emotion starts pouring in on you to learn how to deal with that in a short period of time. I mean, it took 10 years of numbing and you've come back. So obviously you had some good help, but some strength of will to get through that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know that you've done a lot of really cool retreats. You and I have actually talked about that on a personal level, and also, you know, transcendental meditation. And I know you do that twice a day, which is amazing. And you're now even married to legendary television producer Chuck Lorre. I mean, it's a fairy tale ending, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have this wellness business and this wellness blog. Obviously, that came out of your experiences, but tell the listeners how that evolved.
So, you know, the first year of my sobriety was really about getting well emotionally. So like I said, through therapy and through service work, and eventually I felt like I was really stable and, you know, even thriving emotionally. And I just felt uncomfortable physically, especially getting sober. You know, when I was using, I wasn't really eating. So when I got sober, I gained a little bit of weight and I just felt kind of uncomfortable in my skin. So I started a workout program called BBG. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it. Kayla,
it's hard.
It's really hard. I still do it sometimes and it's really challenging. But I started doing that. And with that program, you're encouraged to start an Instagram account for accountability. So I did that and I wanted it to be anonymous, hence the blonde files. And I didn't tell any, I didn't say what my name was. I didn't show my face. It was kind of like my little secret. But it picked up really quickly, and something about challenging myself physically and overcoming that challenge every day, it just transformed my confidence. It was just like another piece of the puzzle. You know, the emotional aspect is part of it. The spiritual aspect is part of it. The physical, you know, it all kind of fits together. So I started the Instagram account. It was not intended to be anything other than, you know, for me to kind of keep track of my workouts and meet other women who were doing it maybe in the LA area. And it just kind of snowballed. It got to a point where this year I was working in the behavioral health field and I was doing that as well. And I couldn't do both because I didn't want to give 80% of myself to clients. So I made the switch to blog full time, and it's been rewarding. I mean, it's an incredible platform to reach people, you know, all over the world. And it's been amazing.
I think that's so interesting about what you said about starting the Instagram account for accountability. I have noticed, you know, one of the things with the podcast is Rebecca and I have gotten more active on social media, Instagram and all of that. And many people that follow us are women and men who are going through divorce, and they're posting about their experience, the trauma, the trials. But in some ways, they also are posting about trying to do the right thing as they go through divorce. There's one woman that I follow, or that follows us, and I follow her posts, and she posts about taking the high road with her ex-husband about the kids and inviting him over for Christmas to decorate the tree with the kids. And I think that's really interesting, where when you put yourself out there to the world, it gives you that accountability, but it also maybe gives you a bar to try to rise up to. And look what it brought you, you know, 225,000 followers and a career.
Yeah.
So that's wonderful.
Yeah, it definitely has an accountability piece to it. And, you know, people ask me how I grew my following, and I don't really know. But I suspect that it was because I share my struggles and I share, you know, hard experiences that I go through, and then the lesson that was on the other side. And that's what people connect with. You know, there's so much, I don't want to get too far into this, but so much, you see a lot of perfection, and everyone tries to create this image or facade on Instagram, and it all kind of looks the same. And I think, you know, no matter what you're going through, I have a girlfriend who is a life coach, and she's had just the most impossible year with all kinds of hardships. And, you know, I encouraged her, like, start sharing about it, because you're going to connect with other people, and that helps with the pain. I mean, a community is so important. And you know, there's good and bad, obviously, with social media and Instagram, but you really can. I mean, I've made some amazing friends through it. And getting to share, you know, my experiences, it's enabled me to connect with other people. So that's an amazing part of it.
What a gift.
And my husband has no idea. You mentioned him. He has no idea what I do. But he's supportive anyway. He brags to everyone about the cookbook, but he doesn't even know what Instagram is.
Well, tell us more about the cookbook.
So the cookbook kind of came to fruition because, you know,
by the way, I have to say, I've cooked a couple of those recipes. They're really amazing.
Yeah.
You know, so people have to try these recipes.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, one of the most common questions that I get is, what do I eat? And, you know, I don't adhere to any like diets or diet rules necessarily, but I do try to eat clean because it makes me feel my best. And that's kind of what I encourage everyone to do, is to do what makes you feel best. I found that there's this misconception that eating clean is boring or expensive or difficult. And, you know, I buy cookbooks, and it's like every recipe has 20 ingredients with a pinch of this and a pinch of that and things I'm going to buy once and never use again. And it's kind of discourages me from actually making anything. So I wanted to just make something, you know, a compilation of recipes of things that I actually eat on a day-to-day basis that are, you know, quote unquote clean, but delicious and easy. That was the most important. And things that you can make, you know, on a Sunday and have leftovers until Wednesday. You can use them for meal prep if you're busy or if you just don't want to cook.
Well, what's cool about the cookbook is that, and by the way, the sweet potato brownies are like amazing.
Brownies.
They're like brownies made with like, you know, sweet potatoes. It's kind of amazing.
Those are my husband's favorite. And I said, I asked him if he wanted to know the magic ingredient. And he said, no.
No, because now I won't like
them
anymore, right?
Him.
But yeah. What I think is really cool is that it's a digital cookbook and that you can actually, there's links to go right to ordering the ingredients from the recipe, you know, which I think is really cool because most of the time it's like, okay, well, where am I going to find that? You know, and so, you know, that you can just go right to it. It takes you right to the link on Amazon and you
it's on Amazon Prime, everything.
Yeah.
So I don't know how we lived without it.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. So we only have a minute or two. So, maybe Susan, you could wrap us up,
yeah,
help us wrap up.
You know, I'm thinking your story is one that is so inspirational. And I think so many people are going to find pieces in, maybe their story isn't the same as yours, but there are pieces that they can identify with. You've been through so much. Is there one last word that you'd like to leave people with as an inspirational, you know, some advice for people who, you know, our listeners, some of them really are at their lowest, maybe a different low than yours, but, you know, to look up and to move forward.
God, I wish I had just one piece of wise advice that I could say, but you know, having been to really the deepest lows that I could ever imagine going through, and having felt like there was really no way out, there is. I mean, there always is. And I know that that's probably the last thing people want to hear who are going through something hard. But sometimes people just need a little bit of hope. And, you know, if I could go through what I went through, like you said, you know, people's circumstances are different. But pain is pain. And
very true.
And, you know, whenever I go through pain now, I just, even if I'm like physically uncomfortable and white knuckling and emotional pain that's visceral, having gone through what I went through, I know that there's something better on the other side. And I know now in hindsight that like, that there's a lesson in everything. So, you know, I don't know if I'm making any sense right now. I feel like I'm rambling, but just to hold on and that there's something better. There's really something better.
I think that's actually the amazing, you know, moral of your story, really. You know, if anyone can hear your story and, you know, everyone go see the video of this on YouTube, because if you see Ariel, the story she just told, you'd never, ever believe it, that she lived through all that. And you know, that's hope right there.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah. Thank you so much. Your story is so inspirational. And, you know, I'm lucky enough to know you on a personal level and you inspire me as a friend, you know, and so yeah. I know that you'll inspire a lot of people as well. If you want to let people know how they can get your cookbook and also learn more about you.
So my website is theblondefiles.com and my Instagram is theblondefiles with two S's because somebody has the one without the extra S and it drives me crazy.
Maybe they'll reach out if they hear this and offer you your your name.
Yeah, for a small price, yeah. Right? Well, thank you again.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it, Ariel. Wonderful.
Thank you for joining us today on Breaking Free, a Modern Divorce podcast. I'm Rebecca Zung.
And I'm Susan Guthrie. Breaking Free Mediation is proud to be the very first family law mediation centers in the country to offer a mindfulness track. Breaking Free Mediation, helping you resolve your family law matter peacefully. Learn more at www.breakingfreemediation.com.
Also, make sure to download your free calming meditation from renowned meditation and energy expert, Scott Picard, at www.breakingfreefromdivorce.com/free meditation.
Check back next Monday for our next edition of our powerful, inspirational, and educational podcast. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, please remember to give us a 5-star rating and let us know what you liked in a review on iTunes.
And remember, you're just one step away from your new life.